This is lecture 14 of the Practical Ministry Skills course. The pastor's Sabbath and Spirit, the minister's Sabbath and Spirit, again taken from chapter 8 of Pastoring the Nuts and Bolts. Our key verse for this one: the seventh day is a Sabbath day of rest dedicated to the Lord your God. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens, the earth, the sea, and everything in them. But on the seventh day, he rested. Exodus 20, 10 and 11. The Sabbath was an identifying mark of God's people. It's one of the ways that they were set apart from the people around them. The Old Testament, and much of the New, but especially the Old Testament, was set in an agrarian culture. People farmed for a living. And sometimes it depended on the weather and so on, when they were going to do their work, when they could do their work. And so all the other cultures, they worked whenever the weather said so. But the Israelites, they didn't work on the Sunday, on the Sabbath, not the Sunday, on the Sabbath. They didn't work on the Sabbath, even if they had already cut the hay and it looked like it was going to rain, or whatever it was. I mean, they milked the cows and they fed the donkeys and they did the things that they needed to do to keep the animals alive, but they didn't work. Other than that, they didn't work on the Sabbath. And that set them apart from the other cultures, because the other cultures looked at them and said, those crazy people with that crazy religion, they're going to starve to death because they're not working according to the weather, but God took care of them anyway. That was the design. That was the idea. So, because if you remember, God called Israel to be a nation that would demonstrate the blessings of knowing Him and living according to Him and following Him, that so that it would attract everybody else around, so they would all be attracted into the family of God. Today, resting in God means something a little bit different. Only we who believe can enter His rest. Now that is a spiritual rest. It's a kind of an emotional, trusting rest. I remember the story about the old guy that had never flown on an airplane in his life, and he had to fly on an airplane one time, and he to visit his daughter in another city, something like that. And she, you know, he was all, don't like this, but I'll do it. And he got there, and she met him at the airplane, and she said, how was the trip, Dad? And he said, well, I got there all right, but I never really let my weight down. And some of you know what's that like. He didn't trust that airplane, so he felt like he was holding himself up. He never sat quite down and rested in the seat. He was always tensed. Whereas when I fly, I believe in the airplane. I just sit back and relax and let it take my whole weight, and I rest. And I tend to fall asleep in an airplane because I believe it's going to be all right. It's going to get me off the ground. It's the same with God. Only we who believe can enter His rest. So the rest now is that God wants us to have, the Sabbath rest, is more of a spiritual thing. That doesn't mean we don't do physical rest, but it's not only physical rest. What this means is that we need to set aside one day every week for rest and reflection and special time with God. Many ministers can tend to have the same kind of an attitude as the unbelieving farmers. Well, there's all this work that I need to do, and I'm doing it for the church, and I'm doing it for God, and I'm doing it for the ministry, but it's too much of it for me to take a day off. I just got to keep on working through. And we think that that's a sign of devotion, and how devoted we are to the work, and how devoted we are to God. And actually, you remember what God had Samuel say to King Saul? I require obedience rather than sacrifice. God doesn't want us sacrificing our mental health, our physical health, by working like crazy 24/7. He wants us to obey Him by setting aside one day every week for rest and reflection and special time with God. This is very important to God. But He doesn't want us to get legalistic about it. Jesus said the Sabbath was made to meet the needs of people, and not people to meet the requirements of the Sabbath. Paul wrote in Romans 14, some think one day is more holy than another day, while others think every day is alike. You should each be fully convinced that whichever day you choose is acceptable. And that is good news for us who are in ministry, because first we need to be clear that the Sabbath is a Jewish thing, and it is defined by the Jews, and appropriately so, because it's their thing, Old Testament and Jewish, as starting on Friday evening at sundown and ending on Saturday evening at sundown. It's that 24 hours. In the church age, many Christians tend to think the Sabbath is Sunday. Well, if you are a Christian who is not working in a ministry that requires you to be working on Sunday, then you can take Sunday as your Sabbath. And if you want to say midnight to midnight, as we tend to say about that Sunday, and instead of sundown to sundown, I don't even think God is worried about that kind of thing. I know He's not worried about it, but I don't think that's a part of it. The point is, take a day. Take a day. Rest your mind and your body by not doing whatever is work for you. See, in the Old Testament agrarian culture, work was physical. There was very, very little, if anybody, whose work consisted of sitting around and thinking or reading or writing all day. Nowadays, there are a lot of people whose work consists of sitting around and what in the Old Testament might have been considered resting. Certainly resting your body. And so, if that's you, then on the Sabbath, on your day off, on your time when you're not working, don't sit there in your chair and look at your computer and stuff. Get out and do something outdoors or something you enjoy, some hobby or something. Rest your mind and body by not doing whatever is work for you. And take a full day. It doesn't work just to say, well, I'll take 3 hours here on Monday morning, and I'll take an hour Tuesday afternoon, and then I'll take another couple hours Wednesday afternoon, and add it all up. Your body and your mind need a connected period of rest to let go of the other stuff and to recharge and to rebuild those gauges. So find the way that works for you. Don't be legalistic about it. Again, Paul said, and I didn't put this on the slide, but I probably should have, Romans 14:5. Some think one day is more holy than another day. Others think every day is alike. Each should be fully convinced that whichever day you choose is acceptable. So pray about it, ask God to guide you in it, and then go with it. The Sabbath is one thing, the daily, once a week. But what about vacations? Should we take vacations? I have known people, ministers, who proudly stated that they hadn't taken a vacation in 30 years or whatever it was. I think that's just sad. Because, for one thing, it implies that they think that nobody can get along without them. They're indispensable. If I'm not here, this thing, this ministry is going to fall apart. And boy, I don't want to leave God in the lurch like that, so I won't take a vacation. That God can handle it, okay? God can handle it, even without you. But the thing is, God commanded, in the same Old Testament where He commanded the Sabbath, He commanded the feasts. There were several times every year that the Israelites were commanded to take time off and go basically have a week of celebration. They would go camping, if you want to put it that way, in the Feast of Booths. They would have big bull roast barbecues. I mean, if you look at the sacrifices, especially the sacrifices at the feast, all those bulls and things that they killed, what did they do with them? They cooked them and they ate them. They had a barbecue. They had a bull roast. Those who study the mind say that it takes not only a stretch of several hours, a full day, not just an hour here and an hour there, but it also takes a stretch of days. I've read 2 weeks to really begin to get the total relaxation and stress out and begin to get back to have the full benefit of time away. The benefit of a vacation. So, if you go on a vacation, go on vacation. Don't keep checking your emails. Don't be working from home. All of that. I mean, it's great to be able to do all of this remote technology, but when you're on vacation, the wife says, "For crying out loud, Harry, relax." Here's the preacher, he's on vacation, but he can't relax. He builds himself out of sand. He builds a pulpit and is wanting to preach a sermon. Now, if God, you go to the beach and God tells you to witness to the other people on the beach, that's one thing. But this, relax. You need to have time to relax. So you're not indispensable. As a matter of fact, they call that a Messiah complex. The idea that nobody can get along without you, that God can't get along without you. God can. I was blessed to serve in a situation where every 7 years, if needed, and if we could work it out with our local congregation, we were allowed to take 3 months off with pay. And I got to a place where I really needed that. I mean, I really needed that. If I had not done that, I think it would have driven me out of the ministry. I would have done something else. But I was able to take my family and my kids. We had almost no money, but we bought an old used camping trailer and drove and just camped in various parks for 3 months. And this was a fairly small church. Still, I was the only minister on staff. And so I arranged for other local ministers, if there was an emergency, if they needed to do a funeral or something like that. But in general, I arranged with the people in the church to do the preaching most of the time. And they were pretty concerned about this. I mean, they could see maybe better than I could that I needed it. But they sent us off, but they were kind of scared about it. But when I came back, I had at least two different people. They welcomed us back, and they had this kind of a meal, of course, and then they had people get up and talk and say some things to welcome us back. And two of those people, separately, both got up, and in different words, they both said, "The greatest thing that ever happened to my spiritual growth was when the pastor went away." I tell you this story to tell you that you're not indispensable. Your church, your ministry won't fall apart if you take the time off that God tells you you need to take the time off. We need to rest. We need to take the Sabbath. We need to feed our spirits. Don't spend so much time taking care of other people's spirits that you neglect your own. Have some kind of a daily devotional and prayer routine that is not tied into preparing a sermon or having a service at which you need to be concerned about other people. Have regular spiritual retreat times. For me, I would go a couple times a year. I would take just 2 or 3 days and go backpacking in the mountains. We lived in an area where we were able to do that. I didn't have the money to go do other kind of stuff, but I could go backpacking. And I got away, and for me that was so helpful, to be just out in the mountains, away where I might not see any other person for several days, and just have that time with God. For you, it may be a totally different kind of thing. I'm an introvert. I'm energized by being alone. It takes energy from me to give to people, to be around people. Other people are the reverse. Being alone drains them, and they gain energy from other people. So whatever works for you. But that's what happens. Some kind of regular time just to devote more than an hour of your morning devotion to being with the Lord. And find a way to listen to other preachers. Read their books, listen to their sermons, visit their churches if you can. Get filled up. You can't just constantly be putting out all the time. I mentioned briefly in the last lecture, and I want to go into this a little more, about dealing with discouragement. And as I said, it's not the same as depression. There is such a thing as a clinical depression that needs to be treated. And should not be ashamed of. It's a physical condition. But sometimes we can just get discouraged. And being discouraged is not a failure. Allowing yourself to stay discouraged, that may be. So learn to strengthen yourself in the Lord. Bill Johnson has a whole book about this, and he bases that off of when it says King David strengthened himself in the Lord after the Amalekites came and raided his city and captured his men's wives and families and ran off and so on. And it says David strengthened himself in the Lord and then led his people out and recovered them. But that's a great book if you can get hold of it. I'm not sure I remember the title, but it's Bill Johnson. I want to approach it from a different passage in the New Testament. And it is one that I hope you're familiar with, from Philippians 4. And I'm going from the New Revised Standard Version, which is a good literal kind of a translation. "Rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I say rejoice." You say, "Well, wait a minute. Thought you were going to talk about what to do if we're discouraged. How can I rejoice if I'm discouraged?" Well, rejoice doesn't necessarily mean feel happy. It means act joyful. Okay? Rejoice, it's something that we can do. God wouldn't have told us to do it if we couldn't choose to do it. So rejoice in the Lord always. No matter what is going on in your life, you can find something about God to rejoice in, to thank Him for, to praise Him for, even if it doesn't necessarily make you feel better. Choose. You remember earlier we talked some lectures ago about Romans 10. Be transformed by renewing your mind, by changing the way you think. If you are discouraged, you can transform that by changing the way you think, by choosing to rejoice. Find something about God to rejoice in. Let your gentleness be known to everyone. You say, what does that have to do with it? Well, don't let discouragement make you harsh. That's number one. Don't let your discouragement make you harsh with other people. That doesn't help anything. And then you'll just feel bad about it. You'll say, oh my goodness, I shouldn't have said that. And that makes you even more discouraged. So don't let discouragement make you harsh, but also be gentle with yourself. Be gentle with yourself when you're discouraged. Don't beat yourself up and say, oh, here, I call myself a Christian and I'm feeling discouraged, and what kind of a Christian am I? And that just makes you feel more discouraged. So be gentle with yourself. Let your gentleness be known to everyone. The Lord is near. And this is, as you can see, I'm reading right through Philippians 4, 4 through 8. The Lord is near. What does that have to do with not being discouraged? Well, remind yourself, God's with me. God is not way off in some distant place. Often when we're discouraged, we tend to feel like God is way off the other side of the universe and not paying any attention to us. Remind yourself that's not true. The Lord is near. God is with you. And He's got this. God has this. He's got you in the palm of His hand. God is not surprised. As Kenneth Hagin used to say, God is not up there in heaven wringing His hands and saying, oh no, what are we going to do about this? God knows. God's got it handled. Do not worry about anything, but in everything, by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. Turn your worries into prayers. Worry is destructive. Prayer is constructive. And it's just a simple shift. Instead of saying, oh no, what if this happens? You say, dear God, please take care of this. Instead of, oh no, what about this? It's, please God, take care of this. And then thank Him. Prayer and supplication, that means asking Him. Prayer means conversation with God. Supplication means asking Him for something specific. But then with thanksgiving, because thanksgiving builds up your faith, right? If you start focusing on the things you're thankful for, find something to be thankful for, good things, the way God has taken care of you in the past, something that will build your faith, and it will, of course, faith is the key to the answered prayers, and it puts things in perspective for you. So prayer and supplication with thanksgiving. You don't have to thank God for the problem, but thank Him for something. Let your request be made known to God. Now, God already knows what you need, but He wants you to ask Him. I mean, like any parent, you have a little kid, and you know the little kid needs, it's time for a snack, and they're hungry, and they want something, and you want to give it to them, but you still like them to come and ask you. Do not worry about anything. We just did that one. So, And the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. Pray through until that happens. Pray until the peace comes. Continue until the peace comes. And Paul ends this, finally, beloved, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is pleasing, whatever is commendable, if there's any excellence and if there's anything worthy of praise, think about these things. Keep on doing the things you've learned and received and heard and seen in me, and the God of peace will be with you. You've gotten yourself out of discouragement. You've prayed until the peace comes. This is how you protect against future discouragement. You keep your focus on the good stuff. You don't deny the bad stuff and pretend like it's not there, but you focus on the good stuff. Real quickly, a prayer journal, writing down, keeping track of your prayers and how God answers them, can be a terrific way to encourage yourself in future times of need. If you keep a file, especially if you're a ministry leader, a pastor, a minister, there will be plenty of times for discouragement. There will be plenty of times people will criticize and complain. But there will be those wonderful times when somebody says something good, thanks you, tells you something that your ministry has meant to them. Keep those. Keep those in a file someplace where you can go back and look at them. When the devil starts telling you you're no good, you're not accomplishing anything, you're not helping anybody, you can go back and put the lie to that and remind yourself of the truth that God is using me in this ministry. God is accomplishing these things. I mentioned happy therapy. That doesn't just work for my wife. Do whatever makes you happy. Find something that makes you happy and do it. Not to the exclusion of anything else, but enough to help keep you healthy. And nobody understands the pressures and stresses on a minister like another minister. So get with some other ministers. Create a little group, not for planning ministry and not for planning activities and all of this stuff, and certainly not for debating theology, but for praying for each other, for supporting each other. Nobody understands it like they do. They understand you. You understand them. You can pray for each other. Keep yourself healthy and strong in your Sabbath, in your spirit, so that God can use you to all your potential for a good long life. And I'll see you next time.